Alright, ladies and gentlemen, once again, this is DJ Tammy rocking live and loud here on a Monday evening here at 7 p.m., top of the hour on the 26th of May. Yes, happy Monday to you. We have a wonderful guest here tonight. Just to give you a heads up, he's in a very distant country, and he wasn't able to get exactly at a private or personal computer, so he is actually at an internet cafe, you know, kind of fending for himself out there, and he's trying his best. So there's going to be probably some unforeseen noise in the background and stuff like that. So, you know, if there's trouble hearing, I'm going to just kindly ask him to repeat himself, but just want to let you know, he's... He's doing the best he can. But anyways, he's got this high profile case that is just constantly, I mean, it is huge in Canada. It's just about in every forefront, front page, every mainstream news there. And I'm surprised we haven't heard much about it here in the United States, and that's a shame. But at any rate, yes, we have Jeff here. He's going to tell us all about it and tell us about a situation. And Jeff Gervo, sorry if I messed up your last name there, but Jeff Gervo, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Gervo, yeah. Good evening.
I knew I was going to eat it up.
How are you this evening?
Doing wonderful, thank you. How are you?
I'm good here in Chiclayo, Peru. Like I said, sorry if there's some background noise, but we'll do our best here.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I got a few questions for you. We'll kick it off at first. Oh, you know, you were once a happily married man. What happened there? When did you get married?
I got married May 27th, 1995, to my late wife, Yvonne. And we had our first child on August 8th, 1996 at 12:34 in the afternoon.
Right,
my daughter had
dot.
and okay. On July 30th, 1999, at exactly 6 p.m., we had my son Landon Jeffrey.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, yeah. Belated congratulations. My goodness. How old are your children now?
My daughter is 17 and my son is 14.
Oh, some good age. Wow.
Yeah.
Still young, but they're becoming adults. So, yes, much to do. And what happened? I mean, there's a huge separation, but I know I'm jumping way ahead. There's a conflict. There is a battle. Can you kind of share that with us a little bit?
Yeah, there's a battle for a long time. I'll throw a little bit of background before I start with the story.
Sure.
When my... late wife, children's mother, was 22 weeks pregnant. She was airlifted from Canada to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, you know, in the United States. As you know, it's one of the best hospitals in the world. She had complete liver failure, and she was given 10 hours to live, and they were able to save her life. She was there for 3 weeks, and then she came back, and then 10 weeks later, we had her young son. So that's just a little background. So she had a lot of health problems over the years. And unfortunately, she also had, for over 9 years, Meniere's disease, which is inner ear disorder, which causes huge dizziness, like the room spinning. And she'd sometimes have to vomit 15
like
times.
Vertigo,
extreme. She'd be bedridden for days and weeks at a time. And then she also, 2 years before she passed away, she had Bell's palsy for 6 months. Half her face was paralyzed. And she had diabetes and she had high blood pressure. So fortunately, she had a lot of health problems.
Yes, unfortunately. I'm sorry she had to go through so much. And did you say that she went through surgery and then 10 weeks later she
gave
birth?
No, she didn't have the surgery. They gave her, they gave her treatment and... His liver is an organ that can, you know, regenerate and best. So she got better and she recovered from that. And then Fast forward to 2004.
Okay.
My son's 4 years old. It's 2 weeks before his fifth birthday, and my daughter is 7 years old. And I'm downstairs on the computer working. I was formerly vice president of marketing for North America for a Toronto company, U.S. Tax Recovery. And what I was making phone calls, and suddenly I heard a shout. My wife was saying, "Jeff, really?" So of course, when you hear a voice like that, you drop everything, literally drop the phone and run upstairs. My children were in the living room watching TV and playing, and my wife was having a hard time, really feeling sick, and so I grabbed the phone, called 911, and within 2 minutes we had first responders there,
That's fast.
and then a community of first responders, and then within about 10 minutes we had the ambulance. So they came and worked on her, and I took my children next door because they're young. I haven't seen that. I took them to a neighbor's house, so I was gone for 5 or 10 minutes, and in that time they working on her, and they took her into the ambulance. So they had her in the ambulance there, and I had my van in the driveway facing out. So I went and locked up the house, and I sat in the van and waited for it to go. And then we're 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, just sitting there. And after that, you're getting very nervous, and I'm sitting there going, "No, let's go." Then suddenly the ambulance took off like a bat out of nowhere, just like a shot. So I took off behind it, and where we lived, it was Nghingaming First Nation, Nestor Falls, Ontario. It's about an hour and 15, 20 minutes drive to the hospital. Well, we're going down the highway, and I got to the floor. I can't go any faster. I'm just keeping up to the ambulance. So I know this is bad. They're going, so we're going and passing, as about halfway to town, I saw flashing lights in the distance, and there was a pull-off area, and the ambulance pulled off, and there was another ambulance there, and two attendants jumped into the ambulance, and then it took off again, and then there was a police car sitting there to watch over the ambulance. So now we have four ambulance attendants and two first responders in the ambulance. So we have six people in the ambulance now, including my wife, and plus my wife. And they're going, so I'm going,
Yeah,
"Geez,
this is not a good sign.
this is not a good sign."
Okay.
And we're racing a town, and about 10 minutes from town, we went from 95 miles an hour to 50. And
I hope there wasn't like a car accident or anything. Did
no,
you guys make
no,
it
no.
okay?
What happened, is, she was gone. So they had been doing CPR. They were doing CPR all the way. And
Oh, wow.
so we got the ambulance. By
Okay.
the time you're going, "Okay, come on and get it working." And I got to the hospital. They were taking her in, and unfortunately, I didn't tell anything for now. So I'm waiting around the hospital for an hour, and no news. But I knew it was bad because nobody would look me in the eye. Doctors, nurses, anyway, the hospital staff, they all, when I looked at them, they all looked down. I understand body language, and so after Dr. Kennedy give me the news, and it was devastating. And
Wow,
so
wow.
so we're at the hospital, and some of my late wife's family came, and none of them, and the mother-in-law was on the way, but none of them said wanted to talk to her, saying, "You have to tell her." Well, when she finally arrived at the hospital, I told her. She slapped me and assaulted me, mad that I said, "I'm not a doctor," she was very upset. And so this was this was a Thursday evening. And so I had to go back and home later, and then children and neighbor. And then next morning I saw them, and I had to sit down and talk to them. And it's, you know, how do you tell a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old that mom's not coming back?
Yes.
Very, very difficult.
Very challenging.
Yeah, and then what problem I ran into right away, I was suddenly getting a lot of pressure from the First Nation tribe where I'm going to bury my wife. They want her to be buried on the Indian Native Reserve. Well,
and why was that?
Well, they believed because of their culture, you know, that they should be on the ground. It was like hallowed ground.
Oh,
and, you
okay.
know, but I respect and, you know, admire their beliefs. But when my mm-hmm. wife was in the Mayo Clinic and I was there with her the whole time, she, you know, she'd already died when she was there. And she made me swear, if anything happened, is she wanted to be buried in the Toronto area where I'm from. And she knew me and my kids would eventually go back to Mississauga. And she wanted my children buried there. So I promised, you know. And it was bad. When she was in the Mayo Clinic, I mean, there was literally 10 doctors working on her. And they're saying, okay, right now it's her decision, but if she goes unconscious, it's your choice what we do here. And luckily, it never got to that point. So I told them this, and they didn't like that. And what really bothered me, they wouldn't abide by her decision. They you know, they didn't respect that at all. And they kept pushing and pushing. And all through the weekend here, you know, I'm grieving, you know, trying to cope. I got two little ones and getting all this pressure. So finally, on a Sunday evening, someone from, you know, won't mention names, from the Weiss family came to talk to me, and he says, Jeff, he says, you're going to bury her here in the reserve. I says, I'm not. He says, you don't understand. We'll do anything. She's been buried in the reserve. You don't understand this. You don't have a choice here. You know, I says, well, whatever. It's my choice. I'm the husband, and good night. So that was Sunday night, and next day I went to town and then went shopping and came back with the kids, and they're coming back on this back onto the reserve where we lived by the school, and I see a big trailer there.
Trailer.
Says,
okay.
Big trailer, a police trailer, and it says the native, you know, the Native Police, the Treaty 3 Police, Criminal Investigations Unit. And I'm going, hey, what happened here? What's the, and I knew a lot of police, and you know, so I pulled over and I told them, no, hey, what's happening? And they said, hey, Jeff, we got to talk to you. And I said, what? Well, the people of the First Nation, the Weiss family, are making accusations against you and your wife's death. And I go, what? And I said, well, hold on, I got my kids here. I'll talk to you later. So I went. And like my late wife's uncle, his wife and my mother-in-law were sisters. His name was Larry. Larry Indian. Really good guy. He was in Ontario, we have, you know, state patrol police.
Mm-hmm.
And more, and he was a sergeant there. So I called him up, and he says, hey, you need a lawyer. And I said, I don't need a lawyer. I'm going. He says, okay, you hold there. I'll be there in 45 minutes. So he flew out and picked me up in his uniform, and we dropped the kids off at a family there, and I went and talked to police. And he's a big, strapping, big guy, 6'4", and he walked in there and said, you know, what the H is happening here? I don't know if you could say hell on the radio, but what the hell is happening here? And he said, look, I don't agree with Jeff, but this is baloney, you know? They said, calm down, Larry, no problem here. We understand, but we got to do investigation if anybody makes accusations. So we went through and I questioned, and then, you know, they said, you know, no problem, and went through that, and that lasted about 10, 12 hours, and then they came, so, okay, you know, we never really had a concerns, you know, investigation's closed, but we're staying nearby. There's a lot of police. We got a huge problem here. And I said, yeah, I know. And so this went on, and
what was before, the accusations?
They accused me of murdering my wife. Well, I mean, it started out to put pressure on me to, I mean, to mm-hmm. pressure me to bury my wife They're saying I killed my wife to put pressure on me. Like, how despicable,
Exactly.
how rude, how terrible, how awful to my late wife's memory. Like, how? And if anybody ever, for me listening, I mean, Yvonne ever heard that, she would not be happy about it. So that was just terrible, you know, and I was so furious. That is for me, but I mean, it's just disgusting.
Yes.
And this it went on, and then the next day, we lived right across from a playground. Picture a house, and there's a road right out front, and then right across the road is there's a nice playground, and little ballpark and a ice rink, outdoor ice rink. And kids were there on their little bikes and playing around. And so I'm sitting on the steps of the porch, you know, keeping an eye on them. And there's a police car to my right. And he's just sitting there, and you didn't really notice him. And my son's on his little bike, you know, with his training wheels. And he goes around the corner of the ice rink outdoor that's, you know, dry now. And the police car starts up, pulls forward till he sees him and stops. And I'm going, okay, Jeff, are you seeing things, or am I going delusional, or I'm in real grief that I'm imagining things? So I get up and I walk to the police officer, and I tell him what I think I just saw. And he said, yeah. He said, you know, keep an eye on the kids. I says, what? He says, Jeff, he says, we're worried somebody could kidnap or apprehend or take your kids to force in the Bering Reserve. He said, this is like a war. And I'm going,
Oh,
what?
wow.
And I said, are you kidding me? He says, no. He says, you guys are like underground. We're watching you for your protection, especially your kids and you know. And I'm going, somebody's going to attack you, or, you know. And I'm going, holy moly, what's going on? This is disgusting, you know. So, and I'm still going through grief and I'm trying to kids and putting up with this crap. My parents, who are pretty old, they're traveling up north from Toronto. It's a 2-day drive to get there, so they finally arrive on a Wednesday, and the funeral's supposed to be on a Thursday around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We're gonna have a service there, and then her casket will be taken back, and then, you know, taken to Toronto. And Wednesday afternoon, I get a phone call from the chief medical officer in Fort Frances, Ontario, and she talks to me. She says, "Jeff, you know, this is terrible. What's going on?" She says, "I'm taking control of physical remains of your wife's caskets for her protection, because there's going to be a riot there. You know, there's being, you know, police. You know, people are going to be fighting for the caskets. You know, we can't have this." And she said, "I'm sorry, you're gonna have to cancel the funeral." And I said, "Please, I begged her, please, please, let us go ahead. You know, I'll try to work this out." And it took a lot of convincing to get her to go along with it. You know, finally she
Sure.
relented and let it go ahead. Yeah, so that was really that was really upsetting, you know.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And so she went ahead and let you carry on with the ceremony, the burial ceremony. And I'm just guessing here. Did the law enforcement there, did they start harassing you during the ceremony?
No, I had no problem. Law enforcement was on my side. I mean, they're not my, they're there to keep the peace. But there's about, oh, I don't know,